Hello and welcome to the Living the Present Moment Study Group. Today is Friday, January 26th, 2018. I'm your host today, Dr. Joel Ying. I'm a physician, educator, storyteller, and the website for my blog, newsletter, courses, and this online study group is livingthepresentmoment.com. You can find updates there, join the email list. The website also has a way you can follow on Facebook and all those other options. I'm always open to feedback and suggestions, so please contact me. And as this year shifted, I talked about in previous calls that I'm shifting this to an interview series where I'm looking for people who have found something that brings them alive, some sort of passion. And I think that's what Living the Present Moment is about. So it's practical advice from people just sharing their stories. And I think of it as interesting people doing interesting things, living their present moment. Today's topic I'm excited about is Freedom Waters and Freedom Waters Foundation. My guest today is Deb Frankel. How are you, Deb?
I'm great. Thanks, Joel, for having me.
Wonderful. I always like to check the technology. I'm excited to have you on the call. I know you come from this diverse background. I was looking online at your bio and that you started in journalism with your undergrad and went through public relations and advertising and then went to social work with a master's in social work and lots of different experience in business and different areas. And I found your background really fascinating. I know you locally from Naples, from many different circles here in the social circles, and I've always been fascinated by just the work you do in the Freedom Waters Foundations. I thought it would be really fun to have you on the call.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And I just wanted to read your mission for anyone who wants to look up the foundation. It's freedomwatersfoundation.org, and their mission, stated online, is to improve the lives of individuals with special needs and veterans by providing therapeutic marine-related experiences on the waters of South Florida. And what does that mean on the practical level, Deb? What do you guys do?
So we have numerous programs where we take people out on the water just for a therapeutic day, relaxation. There's absolutely no pressure of learning anything or having to do anything, but ultimately people learn something, and they certainly make new friends, and most importantly, they relax and have a good time. Mm-hmm. And that's really important for people who, on a day-to-day basis, are dealing with challenges of life-threatening illness like cancer or something else, or people who are disabled who never think they can get out on a boat again, and yet we do that because we have numerous boats in the community that offer their services to partner with us to make that happen. Also, we take veterans out also who, you know, may be hiding out in their houses, but if we can get a hold of them, they'll come out with us and come back changed people and more open to try new things again. So that's one thing we do is our boat outings that are just a 1 to 3 hour cruise on the water. And like I said, we have private and commercial boat owners that donate their use of their vessels and their time to partner with us to do this. And then we also take folks fishing, those with special needs out fishing. And we also do fishing tournaments for youth at risk. We do paddle boarding and kayaking with veterans. And then we have a sailing program that's an adaptive sailing program that we partner with Collier County Parks and Recreation that I started with them over 15 years ago, which we teach people with disabilities how to sail down at Segden Regional Park.
Wow. I think it's beautiful that you offer something so healing through the the experiences with water. I think getting people out, getting people to, get out of their current thoughts of what's going on for them and really think on a wider view and heal a bit with the water.
Right. You know, human beings are so much made up of water, in the first place, and there's a natural relationship between water and humans, and then there's a natural healing property of being out in nature and being on the water, and so it's something that almost happens naturally, and we've just found a way to harness it and use it in a way on an ongoing basis that really makes a difference. And I'm pretty proud of what we've accomplished.
No, it's beautiful. I just, thinking of the Gestalt from my own sailing experiences, I can think how it facilitates community and trust and learning, and really it's a very stimulating experience. I can see that. And I love what you said, though. It is a nonprofit, which I didn't say at the beginning, so you have lots of volunteers, people donating their time, their boats, their money. I mean, lots of ways to really support the individuals that you help.
Yeah, I appreciate what you just said about it feeling like community for you as well, Joel, because I kind of talk about us having a front mission and a back mission, which the front mission is what you read, which is to improve the lives of these people with special needs out on the water. But my back mission as a social worker background, you know, has always been to build a greater sense of community and understanding and tolerance, and we just happen to use the water to do that, bringing people together who may not otherwise ever meet, and this gives them a place to meet and share something that's in common, and inevitably everybody walks away touched, the volunteer, the captain, the boat owner. So it's a pretty special thing that happens.
It's beautiful. What are some of the experiences that keep you going, or the stories from either volunteers or from, you know, the clients who come on?
Well, you know, I'll give you some, but I kind of want to lead into that just by giving some statistics that you sort of touched on. Last year, we had over 3,000 on-the-water experiences in the South Florida area, both on the East and West Coast. We have over 200 volunteers, and we only had, when that was happening, only 2 full-time employees and 1 part-time. Since then, I've hired 2 more part-time people on the other coast because we're just glowing. But I just wanted you to get a understanding or share with the audience the scope of what we do with very little staff. So you asked about some stories. I think the first one that always pops in my mind lately is the how we got our veterans program started. And so I'll tell that story. One of the vet center counselors here in town 5 years ago, or almost 6 years ago now, was volunteering with me on one of my kids' fishing tournaments. And he came up afterwards and he said, "Would you be willing to do a boat outing for veterans?" And I said, "Yeah, I think there's a special need there, absolutely." So we set up our first trip. It was going to be a fishing trip for veterans, and we had 9 of them signed up, and only 2 showed up. And the 2 that showed up were standing in the parking lot with me waiting for the others, and they were looking down at the ground, and they couldn't really look at me, and, you know, underneath their breath, they were saying, "Yeah, we should just cancel this, and we should go home. It was hard for me to come out of the house, too, and, you know, that's probably why the other guys didn't show up. They don't, you know, just, let's just forget it." And I said, "Oh, no, we're going fishing." And so the counselor went and dragged another guy out of bed and brought him back. In the meantime, we got these other 2 guys out fishing, and they had such a good time, and you could see the transition happen from the time they got on the boat of being, you know, very stuck in themselves to slowly opening up and being in nature and enjoying their surroundings to then slightly talking to people. And then by the time they got back, they couldn't stop talking. And one of the veterans, who was a very shy guy even before service, said to me, "We need to do this for, you need to do this for more veterans." And I said, "Okay, you come into my office, you help me do it, and I'll start doing it for more veterans." And so he did. He came into my office, he helped me set up a sheet with the first for an orientation to volunteers of how to talk to combat vets and what to say and what not to say. And we set up our next trip, which was on the Naples Princess, and we had 140 veterans, no wives, no children, just 140 veterans on that trip, the next trip. And so that was, and since then, this young man who helped me, and I'm just not going to give his name just because I'm not sure he would want me to, but he, at the time I met him, was really, you know, isolating himself and staying in the house and had, was diagnosed with PTSD and a TBI. And after being a volunteer with Freedom Waters for a while, he no longer identifies with his PTSD or TBI. He got himself a job. He moved back to Colorado where he wanted to be, but he flew back to Naples, I would say at least four times now over the last 5 years, to be at our veterans meet and greets, which he started on the Naples Princess.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and we have other stories like that where you'll have a person come out, and, you know, inevitably everyone, when they first come out, because they don't know you, they don't know the captain, inevitably everybody's kind of into themselves or into their family. But by the time we come back from one of our boat outings, new friendships have been made. People are smiling. They're hugging when they're leaving. You know, it's a really warm, healing, and loving sharing that happens out there.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful story.
Thanks.
And for those listening who might not know, TBI is traumatic brain injury, and there's a lot of closed head injuries in the military these days with the way that things operate, and the PTSD is a post-traumatic stress disorder where the flashbacks and things like that can be really debilitating, like you said, with the veterans.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead, I was done.
I can also tell you that we've had 90-some-year-old veterans out with us who have said, oh, my God, this is the nicest thing anyone's ever done to me. Or Vietnam veterans who have said, we have never been appreciated like this. You know,
wow.
So just this small little effort to make somebody feel loved and cared about without wanting anything from them. It's just, it all boils down to love on the water. Love is a healing thing anywhere it happens, and then put it on the water, which is another healing form, you got a double goodness.
Oh. Wow, that's beautiful. I'm curious how this all started for you. You know, I was reading your diverse background, and where did the seed of this start to become the foundation you have today?
Well, that's a hard question for me to answer because it's not a straight line and it's not a one thing. It was a kind of curvy road. So I'll tell you my introduction to the whole world of disabled boating, and then I'll share with you how Freedom Waters got started almost 10 years later. So I was an inner city high school social worker in Chicago, and I also had a private practice on the side, and I was getting pretty burnt out. And I literally had visions of sailboats. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go learn how to sail. And because I didn't work in the summer, because the schools were out, I went to learn how to sail. And there was a disabled sailing program in Chicago at the same place. So I started volunteering with them. And by the end of the season, they hired me to help close down the program for that season. And at that point, I decided I was going to quit my job as a social worker, and I was going to be on a boat in the Caribbean being paid when 2000 rolled over. So I moved everything to my parents' house in Orlando, and I drove down to Fort Lauderdale. And the very first door that I ever knocked on was a yacht broker named John Weller, who is my current co-founder of this organization. And I said, look, I'm a social worker who's gone awry, and I want to be on a boat when 2000 rolls over, and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, within a 24-hour period, he had me connected with someone who needed someone to work at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, and I ended up working at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show. And while I was there, they introduced me to boat owners and boat captains, and I was hired on a 130-foot motor yacht as a stew, and I was in the Caribbean when 2000 rolled over being paid. So that is the beginning of my intro to the boating world, both the yachting and the disabled world. And then over the next years, I sort of made a self-made Peace Corps around disabled sailing. I should say that I was invited back to Chicago to run the disabled sailing program for the next 2 years. And the third year, I ran all of the sailing programs for the Chicago Park District. But during the winter months, I sort of made this self-made Peace Corps where I traveled to Canada and Australia, and I pulled some little dinghies across the country in a van and did demonstrations of disabled sailing. And so that was kind of how I took care of the winters for a while. And then I got tired of living out of a suitcase and not having any money. So I landed in Miami, and I'm going to jump because the story gets too long. I ended up working for Miami-Dade County Public Schools for a while, and then that position went full-time, and they gave it to somebody who was more connected in the area. And then I was redoing my resume, and a gentleman in who was helping me said, you should talk to this person in Fort Lauderdale. And I sent my resume to this gentleman, and they didn't have a position open, but they sent it to the president of their organization in New York. That same day, a gentleman in California had sent a video of me doing disabled sailing to the same guy in New York, unbeknownst to the two men.
Oh, wow.
And a week later, the gentleman in New York was sitting in front of me in Fort Lauderdale saying, so how would you like to start a disabled sailing program in Fort Lauderdale, and we'll pay you $40,000? And I literally just bursted out laughing. And I said, well, okay. So I was hired by that organization, which is no longer in existence, but I was hired by them. And I started a lot of the programs of Freedom Waters while I was with that organization. And we started out with one child with cancer and one boat. That has now grown to where we do numerous types of disabilities, numerous types of life-threatening illnesses out on boats now. But when that organization closed their doors in October of 2005, my current co-founder, John Weller, the yacht broker, who got me working at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, he had now had cancer the first time, and he and I kept doing boat outings for kids with cancer while I was unemployed. He would get the boats, I would get the kids, and we just did that. And so in January of 2006, he called me and he said, so did you decide what you're going to do yet? And I said, no. And he said, well, start your own foundation. You need your own foundation. And I said, well, okay, I have no idea how to do that. I have $1,000 in the bank, but something felt right, like I was supposed to do it. I was scared to death, but something felt right. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it, and you're the co-founder. And so that was January of 2006, and we incorporated in March of 2006.
Wow. That's a great story.
And there is, and you know, Joel, I know, because I know you, I know you'll appreciate this other piece of the story. There's a whole spiritual piece to the story, and so I'll share a little bit of that, if that's okay.
Oh, I'd love you to.
When John had me come down to work at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, the gentleman that I was to meet at the show, his name is Larry Dunn. And Dunn, D-U-N-N. And Larry, I worked for Larry for 7 years at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show. I just somehow made myself available in October every year. And so I worked for him for 7 years. in that time, he had melanoma twice, and then in May of 2006, he was diagnosed with brain cancer. The melanoma had metastasized to his brain, and so in the last 2 months of, I should say, for many years when I was working for Larry, he would say to me, Debbie, you need to stop doing that charity stuff. You need to stop doing that. You need to get your real estate license and get your piece of the pie. You deserve your piece of the pie. You know, and so that was what he, like, preached at me for many years. And then when he was diagnosed with the brain cancer and I had already started Freedom Waters Foundation, at one point I was offered a job at a maritime museum, and I called him just to see how he was doing, and I was telling him about this job offer. And he said to me, Debbie, don't sell your soul for security. I see great things happening with you in this charity. And I literally looked in the phone and I said, Larry, did they cut out part of your brain when you were over getting treated? And I was like, really? Like, who is this person? And then I found out that when we went to the last 2 months, he couldn't be alone, so we were all friends, and his cousins and his wife were all taking care of him. You know, we would share days, and when I after he passed away and we were all at the memorial home, his wife said to the director, and I want all the donations to go to her charity. And my mouth dropped open because I didn't really think that she got it, and I didn't think that he was. And then I found out that he was wearing the Freedom Waters hat to and from every single cancer treatment. So, and then on top of that, at the memorial service, I did a eulogy, and after the eulogy, because I'm an emotional mess sometimes, a lot of his friends were coming up to me and telling me, like, without Larry, I wouldn't be here today. He did this for me. Without Larry, And I heard that, like, from numerous people afterwards. So now with Freedom Waters Foundation, well, first, the very first picture that I hung up in my office when I got office was Larry. And then now we have this big fundraiser every year, and we give out one prestigious award for somebody who's done something outstanding for or with Freedom Waters Foundation, and we call it the Well Done Award, D-U-N-N, after Larry. But that's not even the end of the story.
Keep going.
To tell you one more piece. So, as you know, my mom passed away in February of 2008 unexpectedly. And the night that she was dying, Larry's wife, who I had not seen or spoke to for 6 months, was calling my phone while I was in with my mom dying. And I found out the following Monday, because she called me again, and she said, the reason I was calling you is because we have a gift for you. We being herself and her 3-year-old daughter, who, you know, 6 months ago could, you know, barely knew me because she was just a little girl. And she said, we're driving down from North Carolina, and we're going to try to get to you before your mom's memorial service the next day. So they walk in a half an hour before I have to leave for the memorial service, and they're carrying a Build-A-Bear box. And his wife, Amanda, says to me, Morgan, the little girl, made this a week ago, and she said, it's for Debbie. Debbie needs a present. And we both looked at each other, like, and she said, I've been asking her all week, is she sure she doesn't want to play with it? And she said, nope, Debbie needs a present. So I open it up. It's this little pink bear with a little tutu on it, and she's telling me how she kissed the heart before it went into the bear's chest. And I said, I said to the little girl, Morgan, can we take a picture? And she's like, okay. And behind her back, her mom saying she never lets anyone take a picture. We got one picture in. But it was just like Amanda and I both went, this is Larry. Larry just wants to make sure we're connected. It was just amazing. Yeah. So there's this whole, so things around Freedom Waters Foundation have happened like that in a way where, you know, we might, when in the first couple of years where we'd be down to our, like, last $600, and I'd be like, all right, if this is what you want me to do, you better send money because I can't live like this. This is making me really anxious. And I'd go home, and under a placemat, I'd see a envelope that I didn't open the day before with a $5,000 check.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry. Wow. Wow, and the magic continues, it sounds like.
Yeah, and so when you said, when you opened this conversation and you said you wanted to hear about people following, I'm not sure the exact words you used, but following their passion or... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking. Go ahead.
Well, following their passion, I'm not sure the words you used, or, but I truly feel like I just sort of channeled Freedom Waters Foundation. I feel like I was meant to put it on earth, and I've done what I was supposed to do. Because it wasn't ever that I was like, oh, I want to start a foundation. You know, it was never, there was never any thought like that. In fact, it was quite the opposite. I was terrified.
What have been the biggest challenges? What really terrified you?
At the very beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Truly that I had no idea what I was doing. I really had no idea what I was doing. I'd never started a business before. I knew nothing about nonprofits law other than I had, you know, served on another board. I knew very little, and I only had $1,000 to my name. I had no clue what I was going to do or how to do it. So I was terrified every day, like, what am I doing? Am I spinning my wheels and just making something happen where I'm never going to have a paycheck, and how am I going to live? And then I had, you know, my mom going, how are you going to live? How are you going to pay yourself? How are you blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
To a point where I was like, okay, you can't ask me those questions anymore. If I'm scared enough, and I'm just following what I think I'm supposed to do, if you want to jump on the bandwagon and help me, that'd be great. But if not, if you're just going to keep asking those questions, I need to not talk to you for a while. So, thank God she jumped on the bandwagon. But it was just frightening to kind of, it's sort of like you're jumping into a big empty hole that you know nothing about and doing it on total blind faith, which, you know, not being a religious person, I didn't really have any experience with blind faith either, you know?
Wow. And where do you think the faith came from, or where do you think the drive came from for you?
Well, I think for me, because, again, I don't attach it to a religion, or I sort of just think of the universe and that universal energy, and I feel... I just kept listening to my inner voice, and if there is something out there in the universe, or if there is a God, or whatever that is out there, I feel like I just listened and did what I was told to do. But it was an inner voice I was hearing. It was not like some. It wasn't like I was getting a megaphone call from the sky or anything. Yeah.
And what are the biggest challenges now? You know, now that you've gotten through that initial terror, I guess what are the biggest challenges today? And
well, I think, I mean, right now we're in a really good place. But I can tell you all the way, because it's been 12 years now. I can't even believe I can say it's been 12 years. It's been 12 years now. Yeah. So now, you know, now I've had enough experiences where there's been those difficult time periods that I knew that there are difficult time periods, and if I could weather through them, we'd be okay. I think if I was to say what's the biggest challenge for, there's a biggest challenge for me, and then there's a bigger challenge for the foundation. So I'll talk about both of them. The biggest challenge for me is that a lot of people see me and the foundation as one, and that that is difficult for me because I'm a person who likes change and likes challenges and likes to move on, and so it's not easy for me to have that piece of my personality fed because the foundation still needs me. It's kind of like a mom, a child who needs their mom still. Mm-hmm. And so in the same light, I think the challenge for the foundation is to continue to get stronger and more stable as a separate entity from mom or from the founder. And so that it can last many years beyond Debbie Frankel.
Okay.
So, but I think we're, you know, we're getting there. It's almost like we've reached. Like I personally think that as the president and executive director for the first 7 years or so, I got it through almost like a birth to early childhood, you know. And then we had a new board member came on 5 years ago, and he and his wife established the Kind Mariners Ball, which is our biggest fundraiser and raises 2/3 of our annual budget. And that took us from, you know, that child to puberty, you know. So now the organization can breathe. I can breathe. I don't feel like we're living paycheck to paycheck and I'm going to have to figure out how to pay me or my employees. Now we have money in the bank and even are able to have been able to establish a reserve. So we're more financially stable. And now we have a new chair new chairs for our Kind Mariners Ball this year because Mike and Carol did their 3 years. And this gentleman is a gentleman who sees and has already stated, okay, so you guys have done a great job getting you here, and now it's time to build the board stronger and be able to build the organization stronger. So I feel like that right person, you know, the right people keep showing up. And this next phase is going to be making the organization even more stable to be able to separate from Debbie Frankel or mom a little bit, be able to cut the cord a little bit more. And so everybody will flourish, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's, I love that you talked about that inspiring process. And I was trying to remember the word that I used at the beginning about following that passion. And I was listening to a talk recently about saying that spirituality is aliveness. And so people who are alive are following their passion and following their dreams and listening. So I love that it's a story about listening and then following the path and doing. And then just that what you started, you let it grow up. Like you said, it was a baby, and it was a child, and it went into puberty. You really responded to where it was and are trying to create something with a legacy. So I appreciate that life cycle that you've given to what Freedom Waters is, and for anyone who's has something that they're starting to really work through that process, you've kind of shown a map of it. So it's beautiful.
Well, and you know my other piece of my story, and I think I'm going to share a little piece because I don't want it wasn't all smooth sailing for sure. In the middle of this 4 years ago now, as you know, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and that I see that also as a, it was a learning step. You know, while in the cancer situation, you know, you don't see necessarily the lessons or what comes out of it, and you're just trying to take care of yourself, or I was just taking care of myself. But in that, prior to, I call it now BC before cancer, I was very much a, well, people call me an A-type personality, but I didn't see that. I was very much holding a lot to my heart, and holding a lot, I'll just say holding a lot to my breath. I was holding a lot of the control of what was happening in the organization, and I was doing that so that it would stay very, I wanted it to be very high standards, and I didn't, I wasn't totally trusting that putting it into somebody else's hands that it would hold the same standard. And so I did a lot by myself, and I held a lot by myself, but I ended up getting sick. And I think part of that getting sick was doing too much on my own and not letting people help me and giving too much and not being able to receive and take in and replenish. And I think that that's an important piece to talk about, too, if you're... and in the same light of when I was listening so well, things went really well. And when I didn't listen, things didn't go so well. So there were times along that road that, you know, let someone help, or you don't need to control so much. And I just couldn't find the way to do that. So it took something harsh to make me see things differently and operate differently. And truly, I have grown a lot through it, and so has the organization. So I just wanted to put that note in there that, you know, those bumps along the way can be big bumps too. But you still, if you're committed and you can get through it, you will.
Yeah, thank you for sharing something so personal. Yeah, it is. Like you said, there are challenges along the way, and that's a big one. Wow.
Yeah.
And I guess the other side of that whole analogy that you said of, you know, the child growing up is also mom letting go, which is the part you just talked about of being able to let something go and grow up and be something bigger than you. So that's beautiful.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful story of, wow. So many analogies of like you said, anyone who's starting any type of project, whether it's a nonprofit or anything else, of taking care of themselves while they're doing it is really important, like you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And truly staying honest to that inner voice. You know, I didn't always listen, and so that's where I got in trouble. So if you can get quiet enough to really listen to that inner voice, it's, you know, I am blessed to have had a good guide from that inner voice, you know, and because, you know, some people don't get good guidance, but I did get good guidance, and it was when I didn't listen to that good guidance that I got in trouble.
I've heard lots of people talk about their inner voices, and I as well as the, you know, inner critic and the, you know, so there's good and bad voices in there. How do you know which voice you're listening to? I'm just curious for you, what's your experience around, you know, I have a voice in my head that's always like, la, 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 la. You should have done this, you should have done that. And then I know there's another voice that's like...
Yeah, that's not the one. Yeah, you don't want to listen to that voice. it's the one that's... It's the one... Well, for me, it's the one that was... It's much deeper. It's almost... Let me see if I can get it to talk. I almost want to say it's not from the head. It's more from the gut or from the heart. You know, it's not the one that's talking in your head. That's not it. It's almost like a message comes from a much deeper place and gets to your head. It gets to your head so you can hear it. Does that make any sense? Or, I mean,
trying to think of my own experience with that, and that's a beautiful way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, for me, during that, certainly at the very beginning, when I really needed to hear the voice, I'm not a person who listens to much radio or TV anyway, so because to me that's just empty noise. So I have a lot of quiet time, and I think, you know, certainly at the very beginning, gosh, I would wake up with, it almost felt like marching orders. All right, you have to get up and you have to call this person and do this person. You have to fill out this paperwork. I almost felt like I had marching orders. And so I would just get up and do it. And I didn't question it. It's the head chatter that would question it or deny it or poo-poo it. And it's the... you know, when you're most vulnerable and you wake up and you're getting these orders, that's coming from a whole other place. It's coming from a much deeper place. And if you stay quiet enough and you allow that voice to come up, I think that's the voice I'm talking about, not the one that overpowers it. And I don't know if, I bet there's a better, clearer way of saying it, but I think that's the best I can do.
I think you did a great job, especially starting with the fact that it comes from a quiet place. There's so many distractions in our world and so many that we choose. You know, we go, I come home sometimes like, I need to sit in front of the TV or just sit in front of my email. You know, there's so many distractions that it is hard to get to that quiet place. And I love that you described it as a quiet place to start with. And then what you said, that it starts deep down inside, I mean the gut, percolating up through the heart and eventually up to the brain, but it's like it's an integrated thing, and it's not necessarily a, I don't know, the voice in your head, the chatter, which is very different.
Right, and you know, I have to say that there were so many times that, like when I was working for the Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and I was like, okay, I don't want to do this disabled thing anymore. I don't, you know, not because I don't like disabled people, just because I was tired of living out of a suitcase, and I wanted some security of, you know, a place to live and, you know, a paycheck and, you know, like not having to worry about how I'm going to eat. And, you know, I was just tired. And it's just like when I got offered that job to start a disabled training program and they were going to pay me a nice salary, it's like the universe just kept shoving me right back to where I was supposed to be. You know, it's like, so I can resist all I want. I could have continued to resist and go take some job somewhere, but that's what it would have been, me resisting where I was supposed to be. Instead, I went where I was supposed to be. Okay, well, I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. So when that organization closed and John came to me and said, you need to start your own foundation, as terrified as I was, and as much as I don't necessarily believe in some structured God or religion, I still looked up in the sky and I said, okay, I'm going to walk straight in this time and you're going to get me for 5 years, but it's up to you. And I'm here 12 years later because it keeps, when the divergence becomes attractive to me, the next right thing for the organization steps up. And I am offered, I might not be offered the opportunity to leave the organization, but I am offered the opportunity to grow and change within the organization. And that's what's been happening lately.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. I like how you said that, you know, it wasn't smooth sailing. It, even that initial piece came with the feeling of terror and like, what am I doing and all of that. But there was still something inside that said, this is the next right thing. This is the next thing. What would you say is your practice these days, if you were going to call it a spiritual practice? What keeps you in that quiet place?
It's a very good question. Probably one I should revisit. Okay, I'll say the first thing that came to my mind. I have a puppy now.
Oh.
Well, she's a dog now. But, you know, I got her in the middle of the cancer thing, and really she is, she takes me out, she forces me out in nature a lot and takes me out there, and it's been a good thing. And I think walking with her is a big time when I'm quiet, and really enjoying being out. And I'm with a loving, unconditional loving being at the same time, which is pretty darn special.
That is special.
And other than that, I, you know, I still try to find my quiet moments just to listen to what's next.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece to that is, once you hear it, you have to act on it. You can't be, you can't stay in fear mode or in, or allow the mind to overpower that what's next. You have to jump in and not be afraid. You know, so my slogan for Freedom Waters Foundation is making it happen. And that's what I do. I make it happen.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's not enough to just say, yes, that's what you want me to do. You have to go out and do it.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to overcome your own resistance.
I love the pieces of what brought you into your quiet place. I was thinking about a poem recently that I read by Mark Doty, who was talking about how his dog is just always so present, keeps him really present.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I haven't had a pet since I was a child, so this was like a whole new thing for me. A little terrifying also. It was. The day I picked her up, I was crying uncontrollably, and my friend asked me, well, what's wrong? And I said, I'm terrified. I'm terrified that I don't deserve her, and I won't know what to do.
Wow.
It's fluff. Yeah, that could be a whole nother show.
Between Freedom Waters and adopting a pet. It's like the same kind of community, connection, trust, all these same issues and healings and things come up.
Yeah. I know we don't have a lot of time left. Do you mind if I just give one little plug for our fundraiser?
Oh, yes. My next question was going to ask, please plug the fundraiser, and I wanted to ask how people can get involved.
Okay, great. Thank you. So in order to get involved with Freedom Waters, just visit our website, freedomwatersfoundation.org. That's, again, I'll just say it again, freedomwatersfoundation.org. And you can sign up as a volunteer. You can sign up if you have a boat and you want to take some people out on your boat. Like I said, we always send someone with you who knows what they're doing as far as the organization's concerned. We provide lunch and water. Or you can call our office at 239-263-2377. And the other thing that I just asked Joel if I could plug it, so I'm going to. Our big fundraiser is the Kind Mariners Ball, and this year's theme is Treasures of the Sea. It's on March 10th. At the Naples Sailing and Yacht Club. And it has a website also. It's kindmarinersball.com.
Okay, K-I-N-D, Mariners Ball.
K-I-N-D.com.
.com. Beautiful. Well, I encourage everyone who's listening to look up the foundation, look up the ball. Again, it's freedomwatersfoundation.org. And really, thank you again, Debbie, for being on the call. I really appreciate it and all the wisdom that you've shared from just your experience.
Oh, well, thank you, Joel. Thank you. It's absolutely delightful to be here with you.
Thank you. And again, anyone who's looking for more upcoming interviews and other calls, please visit livingthepresentmoment.com. Thanks again, Debbie. Have a great day.
Thank you, too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.